My name is Jim McGraw. I'm the command module pilot of the Apollo 19. Contrary to popular belief, there was at least two more missions to the moon that were kept secret from the public. I flew to the moon on June of 1973, under the command of Commander Thomas Caird. Our friend Steve Willis was the flight's lunar module pilot. The goal of our flight was to be the first manned landing on the lunar far side, you see. Word has it that the Department of Defense received information that the Russians were going to land on the Fermi crater. So we made up our minds to beat them by landing in the Tchaikovsky crater, directly to the east of Fermi. Now, as the CMU, I have a boring yet crucial job in the mission. My purpose is to stay in orbit of the moon while Tom and Steve explore the surface below. Whenever I swing back to the lunar near side, I'll report to Earth on the progress, as we'll be out of direct line of sight with the mission control on the other side. Apollo 19 blasted off from Cape Canaveral on June 16, 1973, and made its transorbital interjection after orbiting the Earth twice. 4 days on the 20th, we entered lunar orbit. Tom and Steve flew down through the tunnel that connected the command module and the lunar module, sealing off both compartments and separating. After I checked the LM over through the triangular CM window, they began to make their descent. The procedure went rather smoothly, exactly as we predicted in the simulations. I watched eagerly as the LM slowly fell to the lunar surface. Soon my friends were out of sight. As they silently fell to the moon, I heard the excitement in their voices. The closer they got, the more tense they sounded. Eventually I heard the radio, a loud whomp.
Touch. Engine shutdown.
For a brief moment, all was dead quiet. Then, when they realized what they had accomplished, I heard my two friends burst out laughing. They had successfully landed on the moon. Within an hour, they had completed their EVA checklist, and they gave Tom a go for the first spacewalk of our mission. No time was wasted in opening the hatch. As Tom got closer to the surface while descending the ladder, he was silent. Soon he reached the footpad of the LM and stepped off onto the moon. Still, no sound was uttered. No poetic phrase. Nothing. Anxiously, I awaited his report. Honestly, anything would have been fine to hear, anything at all. Finally, Tom said my name.
Jim, do you copy?
Yeah, Tom, what is it?
I'm down,
he said, not quite believing in himself. Wide-eyed, I stared at the last bit of Tchaikovsky as it disappeared over the horizon. I laughed and clapped my hands. Bravo, Tom. How's the weather down there? He chuckled a bit.
Clear skies. No clouds. Bright sunlight everywhere.
Within 10 minutes, I passed back over the near side, out of communication with Steve and Tom. Last report I heard, Steve was coming down the ladder and was going to do some exploring with Tom on the lunar rover. After the planting of the flag, of course. Within moments, I had re-established communication with Houston Mission Control and reported the progress of our mission thus far. Over the radio, I heard the thunderous claps of the 50 men monitoring our flight. Gus, our mission assigned Capcom, congratulated me.
Be sure to tell us what you find on your next swing around,
Gus said to me. That's about all I can do up here, I said. Seconds later, I flew from the near side night to the bright daytime far side. What's the word, guys? Asked eagerly. There was nothing but silence for a few moments, and Steve said something.
Jim?
Yeah, Steve?
We found something.
Oh, what is it? There was a pause.
Stumbled across Apollo 18.
Apollo 18. Reported to have crash-landed back in February in the Tycho crater. On the near side of the moon, with the loss of its CMDR and LMP, the CMP attempted to return to Earth, but the heat shielding separated upon re-entry. If the LM had crashed on the other side, what was it doing here in Tchaikovsky? You guys sure it's 18?
Pretty damn sure. We went inside to examine.
Inside? You mean, it isn't crashed. It came down intact.
Perfect. satellites are missing. Their rover tracks lead somewhere deep into the crater. I think we'll follow.
Tom said. It took me a while to process this bombshell. When my craft returned to the near side, I didn't know how to explain this find to Houston.
What's the news from Tom and Steve?
Gus asked. After contemplating what to say, I finally decided to be truthful. They found 18. Silence greeted this. A while later, he came back on.
You're serious?
Come on, Gus, don't play games with me. You must have known about this. How in the hell is something like that supposed to have crashed in Tycho, located on the opposite side of the moon? Another pause.
Probably just a failed satellite, Jim. One that crashed. One of those early Canaveral jobs.
I cut him off. Don't give me some bull excuse of the DOD. It was an LM. They are vastly different from any sort of satellite. Now talk! Radio cutoff was coming up in a few seconds. Right before I lost communication, Gus mumbled.
I don't know what to tell you, Jim.
Daylight flooded through the capsule as I drifted back to the far side. Tom, Steve, what's your status? Over. I said into the mic, obviously irritated.
Listen,
was all Tom replied. What?
He's right, Jim.
Steve intervened.
Listen to the radio.
Deciding to play along, I stopped talking and pressed my ear to the circular speaker on the control panel. That's when I first heard it. There was an absence of static, replaced by a nearly inaudible whisper, along with some sort of mixture of sounds ranging from clicks to crushing to smacking. The whisper portion of the sound hybrid was indecipherable in what it was trying to say. What on earth is that god-awful noise? I asked, shaking with fear.
We're not too sure, but it started 20 minutes after you lost communication with us.
Tom explained. Nothing much else had happened. When I was on the near side, 10 minutes after I became aware of the noise, Steve said,
the rover tracks seem to be going over to that crater over there.
As they neared the edge of the crater, the noise increased drastically in volume, almost to a high-pitched shrill. I covered my ears and gritted my teeth. What's happening? I screamed. The noise died down.
It's as if the nearer we get to the crater, the louder the noise gets,
Tom said. Where's it from, though? There's no sound in a vacuum, so it must be on the frequency. They had no answer for me. Soon, I was back on the near side. When Gus asked me for an update, I decided not to tell him about the noises. I told him that Tom and Steve were following the tracks of the previous astronauts, and that was that. Within 40 minutes, I was back on the far side, but something was different this time. Only Tchaikovsky was black. All other craters were doused with the blazing light of the sun. For some reason, this massive crater was jet black, darker than the night sky. It was supposed to be noonday on the surface there.
It started as soon as you swung around the near side,
Tom explained.
We've been navigating back with lights on our helmets. We had to give up on searching for the crew of 18.
The noise was still there. I looked down at the foreboding crater of night. It looked like a pit that led all the way to the deepest recesses of hell. I struggled to see the pinprick of light against the dark that would mark my friend, but nothing could be seen. It was like the darkness itself swallowed the light. I couldn't take my eyes off it, not until it swung out of view over the horizon.
What's your status, 19?
Gus asked. Tchaikovsky is enshrouded in darkness, I said matter-of-factly. Why? The telltale pause was back. Then the bull excuse.
Maybe it's some sort of light phenomenon. Like how the poles of Earth experience night for 6 months.
I switched off the radio. Not long later, I was back on the far side. As soon as I entered range of communication with the ground crew, I heard heavy panting as if somebody was running frantically. Something was definitely not right. Tom? Steve? What's the matter?
Tom's dead!
Steve cried between gasps.
They got him!
They? Who is they?
Things! Beings 8 feet high! They're blacker than the night shrouding us! These things rise up from the dust! They flipped the rover! They got Tom!
Rise up from the dust?
Ascending from the ground to kill us! I'm on my way to 18's LM! I'm a quarter of a mile away! I may make it!
You're not making any sense! I was crying at this point from confusion and fear. What are they? Before Steve had a chance to answer, he was screaming. I heard him yelling, pleading, begging, whatever he had to tell them, to leave him be. I listened as the thing tore his suit to shreds, as oxygen escaped. I could discern some sort of sickening crack as well as the sound of ripping of flesh. The last thing that came in from Steve was his last convulsive sob, followed by a pop. And then it was over. I suddenly heard the strange noise louder than ever blaring through the radio. Instantly, I switched it off, but the noise continued. I covered my ears until I was back on the near side where it ceased. Switching the radio back on, I screamed at Gus, "They're dead! Tom and Steve are dead! Steve said some sort of thing rose up from the dust to kill them! What were they?" This time, Gus replied. All he said was, "After that, there was static. Mission control ended contact with me. When I realized that they were going to leave me in orbit to die, that's probably what happened to 18 CMP. Either that or they gave him the wrong re-entry coordinates, causing him to burn up on purpose. They didn't want word to get out about what's been happening on the moon. Well, I resolved to try. When I swung back around to the far side, the noise was back to a quiet whisper, and soon I reached the optimal time to make a burn to send the ship home. I switched on the rocket. Nothing happened. I began to laugh hysterically. I came to the conclusion that anticipating this would take place and not wanting to risk upon spreading word of what happened, then NASA supplied us with insufficient fuel to get home. There was no hope of my return to Earth. This transpired 2 days ago. Since then, I've been sitting here contemplating what to do, and meanwhile, the voices continue to speak to me. I don't like it. The words make more sense now. They tell me bad things. I don't know what's worse, the static from the near side or the whispering voices of the far side. Rather than prolonging this torture, I decided to open the hatch without my suit on as soon as I finish this last recording. Hopefully, one day, it'll be found. Before I do so, though, I'd like to issue this one last warning to Earth. Do not return to Tchaikovsky. In fact, do not return to the far side of the moon. All that one will get from here is death. This is Jim McGraw, Command Module Pilot of Apollo 19, signing off for the last time.